The information discussed on this show is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content is for general informational purposes only.
It's Guy's Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guy's Guy Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guy's Guy Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. Today we're going to talk about how we can kind of remap and reframe the human experience with special channel and international speaker and author Rebecca Dawson. You know, folks, have you ever asked yourself, what if the life you're living is based on rules that you never agreed to? Or ask yourself, are we evolving or just waking up to what's always been there? Or is reality fixed, or are you playing inside an invisible framework? The point is, Rebecca Dawson channels a collective group called The Masters, and they talk about time loops frequently and the fact that we as a species actually spend too much time trying to complete a never-ending list of projects and tasks, and we are not open to just being curious about experiences and possibilities that are out there for us. So that's what we're going to get into today. And we're also going to channel the Masters, and I'm going to interview them and ask this multidimensional collective about what's going on out there and what people can do to help themselves and make this a better world for humanity.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guy's Guy Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and let me tell you a little bit about what's going on. You know the show, Guy's Guy Radio, it's where we go beyond the surface level conversations, and we get into what's really driving our lives. And I'm your host, once again, Robert Manny. Today, our special guest is a return guest, Rebecca Dawson, author of a couple of books, most notably The Agreement and The New Human Experience. Her work suggests that much of what we believe about reality, identity, and even free will may not be what it seems, and that humanity is in the middle of a profound shift. And this isn't just about spirituality. It's about questioning the framework of reality itself. So if you've ever felt like something deeper is going on beneath the surface of everyday life, stay with us. This one goes there. Welcome back to Guy's Guy Radio, Rebecca Dawson.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me with you. Always happy to create new conversations with you.
Fantastic. And Rebecca, you work with a collective called The Masters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've...
Go ahead.
I've been with them for around 30 years, streams of consciousness that come through me as channeled wisdom for humanity as we're going through this epic shift in consciousness.
Over that time frame, first of all, for the benefit of our audience who's not that familiar with your work, you call them the Masters. Who are they based on what your understanding is? And how do they describe themselves?
Well, they would describe themselves as aspects of the one consciousness that we're all a part of. They express themselves in particular ways, sometimes through particular personalities. But what distinguishes them from most other people we come across in our lives is that they seem to have access to an unlimited body of wisdom and knowledge, not just about what's happening right now, but also potentials and possibilities for the future, things that have happened in the past and histories that we might have forgotten or are not aware of. And so they make themselves available to help us become clearer about who we are as a species. And offer us assistance and clarity.
Now, when you work with them and they come through you, what was the inciting, triggering incident where they first came to you? And what was your, just as a human being, what was your first reaction to them? Were you afraid? Did you fight it? Did you welcome it? And over time, how has that relationship evolved?
Well, they first arose in my awareness actually at night when I was a teenager. I used to go to sleep and I would wake up in the night and there'd be three beings standing next to the bed, and they were kind of wore hooded white cloaks, so I couldn't really see them, but they would stand there next to me and I would feel energy moving around my body and things inside my system that I hadn't really felt before, and then I would just drift off to sleep. And that happened for a number of years. And then when I was 18, I was offering some guidance to someone who was going through a very distressing situation. That's something I had done since I was a young child, strangely. But there you are, people used to come to me for guidance. And as I was speaking with them, suddenly I felt my energy field expand incredibly. And I felt myself almost move to one side. And then my voice changed, and all of a sudden there was all of this wisdom about this person who was sitting in front of me, their situation and why they were going through what they were going through. And it was just a profoundly strong energy. And it happened very naturally for me. It didn't necessarily feel uncomfortable at the time, but it did take a number of years to learn how to move in and out of this state at will. Mm-hmm. And in a way that doesn't affect my physical body or nervous system.
So when you're in your state of channeling, are you aware of the message and the words that are coming through you, or do you step back from it, or is it you conveying what they're saying, or is it them conveying what they're communicating through you?
It would be the latter. So my experience of it is that it is a wisdom that is expressed through their stream of consciousness, through me and my physical body and my voice, and indeed through my vibrational field. My personal experience of it is like becoming a third person in the conversation. So I have an awareness of what's being said. I can hear it. It's like I'm in the same room, but I'm not the one that's having the conversation. But more interestingly, perhaps, is that I do remember some things. Mm-hmm. I have learned over the years not to remember too much, because it's quite overwhelming the amount of wisdom that can be expressed. So I usually record everything so that people can have reference to it later. But what many people don't realize is that when I'm in the state of channeling, I have an incredible visual view of what's happening. So I'm offered a visual representation of all of this wisdom, all of these possibilities. And it's quite mind-blowing, because it's almost multidimensional. I'll give you an example.
Please.
We might have someone coming to us who's having an issue around a particular thing that's happening in their life, and they want some clarity over some choices that they need to make, or why things are happening the way that they are. So if we're sitting with them in channel, there'll be sentences of wisdom that are offered to them. But what's happening in my perspective is I'm seeing a whole multidimensional map of everything about this person and their life. Mm-hmm. And what that looks like is a whole a whole galaxy of spheres almost, and the masters will come through and they'll zoom into one particular sphere and they might talk about what's happening in there and then zoom to another one. And there's so much in there because it's other alternative life experiences, it's history, it's future. There's a lot happening. And oftentimes when it first started for me, they would go in and speak about, we want to speak to you about this and how this is unfolding in your life. And I would be so captivated by everything else that I was seeing that I would be having an internal conversation and saying, but what about this? This is really, really important. This is a big feature of this person's life.
Yeah.
But they will only express what you need to know right now to assist you with where you are now. And even though I can have a glimpse of all of these other things, a very small sliver of what is viewed is actually shared. Even though it can be profound and life-changing, there's so much more.
Wow. So, Rebecca, you also do some type of readings on people. Is it always through the masters, or is that part of another gift that you have that you can scan somebody and you can pick up on things and you can communicate to them kind of what's going on? Because I know
well,
we've had
folks.
Those conversations in the past, and you tipped me off to a couple of things, and it seemed like it was coming from you. This wasn't through a channeling session.
Right. Well, I've been doing this for so long that there's not really any separation anymore.
Oh, amazing.
So it's really just a question, what mode am I in to express that? And I would liken it to driving a car. You can be in different gears depending on how efficient and how fast you want to go. So when it's just like my personality speaking, it's like first or second gear. So it's a little bit slower, or I'll offer that information in a way that seems kind of okay, palatable, and that makes sense. And when the masters come through, it's like being in fifth gear and beyond, because it's very fast, it flows, and there's access to a lot more. But there's not really any separation. It's just the mode through which we express that changes now.
Amazing. And how has this impacted your life? And also, how do you communicate with the masters when you're just in your day-to-day 3D existence?
Well, that's interesting, because that's almost like saying, well, how do you communicate with yourself? Okay. And what I sense about that, or my experience with communication with the masters, is say I'm going through a bit of a challenging situation, or there's something I'd like to know a little bit more about, I'm a bit curious. A conversation will be generated externally. Either the next person that comes along for a session is having a very similar issue to what I'm asking a question about, and all of the wisdom will be offered there in that context, or we'll actually generate a seminar series that's based upon what I'm curious about, and all of the wisdom will be experienced there. So it's not as if I have an internal dialogue going on, because it's so integrated into who I am. I experience the wisdom of it as it's generated,
okay,
in the audience and in the community. So I get to benefit from that also.
so for your day-to-day life, then you can intend and communicate with the masters and say, for instance, you're looking at considering a move or something. Would you tap in and say, please guide me and thank you for guiding me to where I should be at this point?
Yes. And oftentimes it's a leap of faith. More often than not, it's an unknown. And then it starts to appear in a conversation. In the reality, someone might turn up and offer me, you know, here is a solution. Or I actually just had a call earlier from a friend of a friend who's an insider realtor here, who's going to offer some experience. So things start to show up in the external environment. And that's how I experience the wisdom of the masters. There can also be an inner knowing. As well, but the way that I tend to experience is it gets displayed in my environment.
Okay. Rebecca Dawson, channel and author from Australia, here in California now. You have a couple of books, noteworthy books. You have The Agreement and The New Human Experience. Tell our audience a little bit about both books and what was the bridge between when you wrote The Agreement, what it's about, and then how you were led to write The New Human Experience and what that's all about.
Okay. Well, there are our first two books. We actually have four and a fifth one on the way at the moment. But those two, I would say, are the most foundational books that I would invite people to engage with if they're beginning to explore a shift from 3D to 5D and multidimensionality. What does that mean? What are our inherent capacities?
Okay.
So the new human experience came through a series of private channelings in my living room over a couple of years with a close group of friends and family, as we were really just discovering the shift that humanity's consciousness was going through and what was going to be happening in the years ahead. And it was such beautifully simple, powerful, and pertinent information that really helps us understand structurally and experientially what is different between where we were and where we are now and where we're going. And as such, how do all the things that we used to do that used to work within that framework, why aren't they working anymore? And how do we do it differently now? So that's the conversation within the new human experience. And that looks at how our body and our nervous system and the chakra system is different, how manifesting is different, how relationships are different. It's a different framework for a different a set of vibrational blueprints. So it's different. We can't do things the same way anymore. They don't get the same results.
Okay.
So that's that book. And the bridge then to the second book, which was the agreement came through in a very profound way. It wasn't in a series of conversations like the previous one. It came through over about 8 weeks, and it was really looking at the pillars of our human experience and what are they really? What are emotions really? How do they work? What does it mean? What are thoughts? What's that about? What are relationships? Because everything that we think these things are have been experienced within a particular view. And this is a much deeper insight into what all of these human experiences are and the gifts that they offer us.
Okay, why don't you continue? Because I neglected to mention your other two books, and then now you're working on a fifth book. So continue on this journey of writing through
Okay.
the masters. And sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So things change very quickly these days, right? So and then we had a book, Fu, The Return of the Magnetic Human. And this was also received over a period of about 8 weeks. And this is all about how humans are inherently magnetic. Our biology is magnetic. Our reality is generated in a magnetic way. It's not electrical, which, and we've been taught to frame our lives and structure our lives in terms of electrical transference, energy reciprocation. So this talks about that shift from electric operation to magnetic operation and how that translates through all of our lives so that we can become more powerful in our own experience and generate new things more easily. So that's that book. And then we had a lovely little book about purpose. And the book is called The Game of Purpose and how purpose has become a game for us. And what happens if we don't play that game?
Okay. Now you have a new one on the way.
Yes, it's all about fusion energy and how fusion energy is actually the core principle for how we operate. And it looks at the idea of plasma, of light not traveling and working in the way that we think it does, and how that informs how we show up in the world and how we create things.
Fantastic. Well, I hope we can bring the masters on. I have a few more questions for you, but would that be okay? Would they join us today?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. So, what is it that people, since you've done so much work with this collective, the masters, what is the main thing that people that we're doing wrong that people need to be aware of so they can start raising their frequency, not being as filled with fear and live their best lives and find the joy.
What an interesting question. I it's interesting the way you frame that as doing something wrong as opposed to doing something right. But let's dive in and see what they have to say. Greetings to you. We are with you.
Thank you, Masters.
We would suggest that the greatest challenge that humanity has at this time is the ability to enjoy life.
Yes.
And humans will often say, well, when things are in place and when I have done what I need to do, when I have completed what I believe is the burden that I carry with me, then I can enjoy life. Humanity inherently sees the world and its experience and its existence as a problem to be solved, a puzzle. It gives the mind something to grapple with, and the mind is very happy when it has something important to attend to. This is where the notion of the ego and the persona for purpose has arisen. And yet we say unto you, the greatest opening and invitation for humanity at this time is alleviate the burden of viewing yourselves as problems to be solved and the world as a problem to be solved. There is an opportunity for humanity to enter a new era of respect. Respect between the human and its environment, and a mutually respective view that the environment also respects humanity. In this way, there is no problem to be solved, but rather an experience to live. Imagine for a moment, blessed one known as Robert, what you would do with your day if there were no problems to be solved. So many more openings and pathways for experience immediately become available to you because you are now attuning yourself to possibility rather than completion of a problem that began well before you arose into this human form. Do we answer your question?
Yes, thank you. We have a very complicated world net right now, and it seems like a lot of people are challenged with, they're not sure what to believe. There's so much information and disinformation that it's really difficult for people to kind of parse through everything that's coming at them and determine what is real and what isn't real. And again, the fear factor has been dialed way up by the communication that we get, the information we get, whether it's from the media, from the government, or whatever, that people are very unsure, and the screws seem like they're tightening up for people, and it's difficult for them, I think, nowadays more than ever, to be present, because we keep being pushed to be in a reactive state, whether versus a responsive state.
Indeed, and it is, of course, the same theme that we would wish to present in this instance, which is viewing life as a problem to be solved. When the mind is engaged in viewing reality in this way, it seeks to answer the question. What it doesn't do is it doesn't allow curiosity to arise. And so, looking at the world as it is, you say it is complex and complicated. The mind wants to look at it and say, how do I solve this? How do I answer this? How do I have a definitive notion of what this is? And the mind naturally, in that state, it wants to complete something. It wants to close the loop of the unknown. It wants to finish it. And so the mind continues to seek the answer to the problem that is being presented. Instead, we would invite humanity to relax the mind instead into asking the question, I wonder what this is. I wonder what it will happen next. I wonder what it's going to display now. I wonder what the wisdom in this is. And immediately, when humanity becomes the questioner, instead of the one burdened with the responsibility to find the answer, life begins to open and humanity begins to see and witness the harmonic intersection between everything that is occurring. Because all of the complexity that is viewed at this time is seen as the complexity of things to be answered, a complexity of different nuances of life that the mind is burdening itself to solve the puzzle of. But to very quickly alleviate this stress, one can move to being the questioner, because when you are the questioner, the curiosity begins to generate new seeds and you begin to discover the interconnectedness of all things. Because humans are not here to solve the problem of life or to come up with the answers for the unknown, but rather humanity is here to stimulate more life into being, to stimulate evolution, to stimulate creativity and creation of a new world by becoming the ones that ask the questions. And you can see the invitation even at this time within your technological and informational advances. humanity is learning that the most effective way to engage with these new platforms of information is to become very succinct and very skilled in asking the questions.
And who are we asking the questions to? Ourselves?
To life, to reality. I wonder what? What is possible next? What do you feel about this? And even with what humans are calling artificial intelligence, which we would refer to more accurately as actualized intelligence, it is placing humanity in a position where, in order to evolve, they must become the questioners, not the ones who are obsessed with finding the answers. And if you go back to the origins of humanity and perhaps the most original peoples, and indeed many of the indigenous cultures that still exist in your reality, they are the ones who ask questions to consciousness, to their gods, to the natural environment. They are not the ones that are seeking to become the ones who have the answers. And that is harmony.
Okay. There's a lot of talk nowadays that we didn't have 15 years ago about disclosure and other civilizations, if you will, other beings, either in the sky or walking the planet or even inside the planet. And a lot of people are, you know, they should be, it sounds like, in the what if. Have there been civilizations and beings on Earth prior to humanity, and are they with us on Earth now, and should we be curious or afraid?
Yes, they are. They always have been, and they always will be. Humans have not yet understood that their perception of reality is based upon the containment of their beliefs. And the more you have answers, the more structured belief you generate. If something is fact, there is a structure of belief, and that belief acts as a containment for your vision so that you can only view and perceive that which you already have a belief for. And so as humanity becomes more curious, becomes disillusioned with trying to find the answers, and accepts that curiosity and the ability to ask questions of your reality will enable the containment, the cages of systemic belief to open and allow you to perceive and view what has always been right next to you.
What can people do? I think a lot of people nowadays believe that there are other beings, and there's a lot of information, and there's a lot of technology that has been suppressed from humanity. Is that the case? And if so, what can people do to keep pushing on, rattling the cage, if you will, open those doors, and let's be curious collectively, and let's get some answers instead of certain people maybe knowing about things that exist that aren't sharing it with the general population?
Well, we would suggest that the opening of the view is happening, and it is inevitable. Much that can continue to restrict that curiosity and that expanded state of vision. It is happening. The availability for humanity at this time, as that restriction decreases and the view opens, is to decide, will I approach this with curiosity, or will I approach this with a desire for a definitive solution? And it is the desire for the definitive solution that keeps humanity in the restricted view, what many would call fear. Why is it that fear and restricted view are a synonymous experience? Because when the naturally expansive nervous system of the senses that each and every human embodies is limited to a particular aperture of view, your nervous system decreases in its expansion with that. You begin to feel compressed, perhaps claustrophobic. What was comfortable in your coziness of belief now becomes almost unbearable in its sense of restriction. And so while there may be many humans who would prefer to stay within the comfort of having the answers and having the answers provided to them to reassure them of this comfort, it inevitably will become so uncomfortable that expansion is the only unfolding available.
You know, I do some work with aging. I'd been writing a column about it. I'm working on a proposal about it. And it seems to me that very similar to what you're saying, Masters, is that we are kind of given titles. We are given labels throughout our lives. Okay, you're the child, you do this. You're a student, you do this. Now you're 40 years old, you're a parent or whatever. And then when you're at a certain age, they retire you and then get out of the way. And they almost, it sounds like our culture almost sets a definition and a role for us based on a chronological age. I think that's wrong. And I think that there's a lot more possibilities for people to be able to live a lot longer and to live a lot healthier and to live more vital. And it's just a matter of being open to it and taking care of yourself as best you can and seeing the possibilities. What are the possibilities for people aging? We have a huge baby boomer population now. They're getting older. Now they're saying, what about longevity? Because they're afraid. But it's more than that. It's, to me, it's, there's a lot of opportunities out there as we age. And maybe some of the information that we could use to age more healthily is not being shared with us. But we need to do things on our own to be able to age in a way where we're making the aging a choice. I'm not sure if I articulated that well, but help me out, Masters.
Of course. And we have been very deliberate in our choice of words on this day, because it's important to understand that the very mechanics of your consciousness and existence is to generate life and generate reality. And it is that notion of generation that ensures the ongoing vitality of your human form. But when humanity is conditioned to seek solutions to problems, to seek closure, to seek completion, that is not an energy that is disposed for vitality. That is an energy that is designed to close something off, that is moving towards a death. If we have solved the problem, we can now put it to rest. But rather to exercise a continual state of curiosity for life. Curiosity is the vibration of vitality. What do you know about these roles that you have suggested that occur for humanity throughout life? Every role that is assigned to you at every particular age is embodied around, this is the role that is designated to solve this particular set of problems. Now, there are many that move into what humans will call retirement. And what you will notice is that those that flourish in retirement are those that have a very robust sense of curiosity. I wonder what this is. I want to explore this. I wonder what will happen today. They are less scheduled. They are not interested in solving the problems of life. And those are the ones with the most vitality.
Yes.
So curiosity and being the one who asks the questions is central and inherent to a long, healthy, robust sense of vitality in life. Seeking to continually close loops, answer questions, and fulfill the purpose of being a problem solver is pushing humanity's experience towards a continual cycle that ends in death.
Thank you, Masters. And guys, you're reading with Rebecca Dawson channel and the Masters who we're channeling right now. Let me ask you a personal question. I have a son, he's 12. He's struggling in some things as many boys do at that age. And I think he'll work his way through it, but it's not really about work, but I'm trying to get on beam with him so I can help him out. What can we do to some of those young men nowadays that seem to have some challenges in terms of focus and organization and things?
Yes. Like that? And what are they challenged with? They're challenged because their consciousness in the young ones at this time are not interested in solving the problems of life. But what they have been taught is that in order to have any validity for their existence here, they must adopt that role. You are not valid here. You have no right to be here. There is no purpose for you being here unless you adopt a role of solving a problem, because Earth is a problem and humanity is a problem. So this is a young one who very exuberant in his energy, very intelligent, is completely aware that he is not interested in solving the problems of life. What he is interested in is the mystery of life and allowing his imagination and intuition to take him into experiences that most humans, particularly adult humans, do not see as having any value. And yet what we encourage you to do as the parent is to offer him many opportunities where his curiosity can arise and he can imagine what is possible. Because they are emerging in a reality where the traditional roles that they are being asked to step into will no longer be available within the next 8 to 12 years. And then what? So this is the time of fertility for curating their sense of self in the world. Most importantly, you have a right to be here regardless of whether or not you are solving a problem. You have a right to be here just because of your presence and your imagination and your intuition. You have a right to be here, and your existence is valuable. That is what is important at this time. Because the men of the future, the human males of the future, will lead with vision, not with their problem-solving capacities.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Let's just switch subjects for a moment, if I may. A lot of focus in our culture nowadays is financial, and people are saying that there's going to be a reset, and either cash will be gone, it'll be digital, or there's going to be Gisera, where the whole system gets reset. What is your guidance in terms of how we focus on that? Obviously, we want to have the what if curiosity about it, but a lot of people are concerned that it's kind of like a shell game, that there's nothing really behind the financial systems.
There is some intuition in that, but the greatest concern that humans have is if this comes to an end, everything comes to an end. If this comes to an end, what will then be generated? And again, humans are so focused, the human mind is so focused on completion that it does not realize or understand that it, and in and of itself, perhaps subconsciously in a collective way, has mirrored your current financial experiences towards completion. Because that's what humans do. The more problems they try to solve, the more they push it towards completion. And so the entire financial system has been seen as a system that solves problems or is a problem to be solved, and therefore it is inching towards completion. The question to focus on here is what new will generate and arise, if I am curious. And that you will see most clearly, even within the next 4 years in your planetary experience, the rising of not just one alternative system, but many. This is the curiosity phase. In many ways, we would view the next 4 years as a renaissance of what humans believe financial system to be.
Should we be optimistic in these next 4 years, or is it going to be tumultuous and only some people will benefit? A lot of people say, Masters, that there's going to be a split in consciousness where certain people kind of ascend frequency-wise and other people don't. Not that that's bad, but there's going to be kind of a split.
There is a split in experience and a split in view, because now you actually have choice for the first time in many hundreds of thousands of years. I can choose to see this as a problem to be solved, and therefore that will be my experience of containment. Or I can see this as a curiosity. I wonder what's going to happen now. I wonder what's going to arise now to replace this. I wonder what else is going to be happening. And it is with that joie de vivre, as we have said, humans are challenged with the actual enjoyment of life. And it's particularly challenging for humans to enjoy change. So this is a period of change.
Okay. We want to be curious and we want to say, what if? But also, and not always trying to be controlling and problem solving, but it seems like we have to participate also. How can people, today's people, determine where they should put their energy beyond curiosity?
Well, we would say very simply, where to place your focus is where it is most interesting and stimulating to you.
Okay.
And fear has been known as stimulating, but more and more frequently, fear is becoming an experience of compression. and compression is not being felt to be stimulating. Anything that you are placing your focus upon that feels stimulating to you is a view of generation, expansion, and change. So there is much for humanity to be optimistic about at this time, more so than perhaps you would believe, because you actually have the capacity to experience and generate change in a way that feels stimulating and expansive, rather than change that is forced upon you, or so it would appear, and only leads to more compression and suppression. And isn't that why humans are suspicious of change? Because there has been hundreds of thousands of years of humans having a mass consciousness belief that, oh, this change is here. I didn't arrange it. I didn't orchestrate it. It seems to be something that is applied to my reality or applied to my situation. And the outcome is not freedom and stimulation. It's more compression.
Okay, thank you. The next then 5 years with this change, what are some, if you could get specific as much as you want to share, what are we looking at? Because it seems like everything's leading to a pressure point where things are going to start happening. If they haven't already started happening, we can see it kind of experience it kind of every day. What are the next 5 years look like for humanity?
The most important shift occurring is your capacity to view reality clearly. And that clarity of reality has been historically experienced in terms of detail. If I can see all the details in this, I can see it clearly. And when humans get drawn into detail, they get caught in thoughts and beliefs and systems. And this is what keeps humanity in systems. Mm-hmm. Now, if you begin to realize that your capacity for clear vision that's emerging at this time is not in the detail, it's in the vast macroscopic view of interconnectedness, this is the most powerful shift that's happening. Humanity can now see, I can see that that's happening, I can see that that's happening, I can see that that's happening. It's all generating something. Something's occurring. And what you can begin to focus your attention on is what now appears in the spaces between. Because when you have macroscopic vision, you start to see things you couldn't see before. Things become available to you that weren't available before. So this is not a question of what is going to be missing and what is going to be introduced. It's a question of what can I now access that I couldn't access before. Mm-hmm. And this is across many different fields of investigation and experience. This means the way in which families will be experiencing themselves will be different. The way in which the geopolitical formations on your planet are occurring, not so much in the next 5 years, but in the next 8 to 12 years, will become more macroscopic. Not in a way that humans need to feel compressed by, but in a way that enables choice to become something that is more coherent and give humanity an opportunity to participate in the choices that are made. The financial systems, of course, are going to become what humans have largely called decentralized. Decentralization is all about humanity actively participating in the reality that is being created. So that decentralization theme also moves into how humans view their health and their bodies and the medical expressions. That now becomes decentralized also. It becomes less about your own personal experience and more about how are we existing in vitality as a species.
Fantastic. Last question. So what would one thing be that people can do to put themselves in a position to best keep their sense of curiosity and adventure and interest going forward? Because, I've been meditating. I think that helps people. And just what are some things that people can do to open themselves up so they don't succumb to all of the time loops and the pressure?
We will offer, in our view, something that is very important for humans to focus on. And that is the reality that humanity, you have come to believe that you can regress. You can come to believe that you can almost get there and then everything is destroyed. And this is something inherent in your cellular biology as inherited memory. That is based upon seeing yourselves as problem solvers working towards completion. Of course, there's going to be a death. Of course, you have to start again if you're moving towards completion and solving problems. This is the shift in human consciousness, and there are many galactic brothers and sisters who are here with you to experience this with you at this time, where the leap is we are now not moving to completion. We are now moving to evolution, because humanity has not truly experienced evolution in the way that the cosmic arc of evolution is designed. You have been repeating and going on loops of creation and destruction. And so what we wish to say about this time is that there is no possibility of regression. There is no possibility of completion. You will move beyond what you are trying to complete, and you will move into a new experience of expansion. This is the way. It is inevitable. And so we encourage you to be optimistic. There is fear within your bodies and with your subconscious that you're so close, but you're going to destroy yourselves. It's a memory program, and evolution is inarguable.
Thank you, Masters. Thank you so much.
It is our great joy to be with you. Celebrate. Enjoy life. There is much to discover yet.
Thank you. Rebecca, are you back?
I am here.
That was amazing. Thank you so much for being on Guys Guys Radio once again.
Thank you for having me. Always a delight. Thanks, Robert.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, another fascinating conversation with Rebecca Dawson and the Masters, who are a multidimensional collective that she's been communicating with and have been communicating through her for the past 30 years. I'm very pleased that the Masters joined us on Guys Guys Radio, and how crisp and clear they were, because sometimes I watch them and listened online to YouTube and other things that Rebecca has done, and sometimes I have a hard time breaking down some of their messaging. Yet for our show today, they made it very clear. I don't want to say simple in a bad way, but very digestible for me and our audience. So I hope we all got something out of it. And it seems like the main takeaway is, once again, these time loops where people keep doing the same things over and over again. And you know what Einstein said about, if you approach the same problems the exact same way and don't try anything different, it's the definition of insanity. So the good news is that with the keeping the mindset of what if and possibilities, no matter what's being thrown at us, if we keep an open mind and an open heart, and a what-if mentality, like when we're looking at a good story, a lot of great things can happen, and it sounds like a lot of great things and a renaissance is on the way for humanity. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show, and until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.